Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kara Warren. And on today's episode, we have Martin Bose of Bosca. He is the CEO and founder of Bosca Food Tools. Bosca originated in Holland over 125 years ago and sells over 2,000 different food tools with a focus on cheese. They've become a fan favorite of cheese professionals around the U.S. And for the everyday consumer, they produce party clettes, a.k.a. raclette melters, to fondue pots. Martin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So the very last time you were on the show was over 10 years ago. And it was for a 10-minute interview.
It's been a while, yes.
Yeah. And it was for a short interview with Ann Saxelby over the phone. So I'm really excited to have you on today so that we can delve in a little deeper and kind of learn a little bit more about Bosca. Because now you can tell me, how do you feel the expectations of cheese tools have changed in the last 10 years?
Oh, that's an interesting one. The expectations have changed. Entertaining became even more important. Of course, a lot happened during COVID where home cooking and indulging yourself at home became more and more important. So that part changed, as well as the quality standards luckily changed, because we're a big fan of producing high quality products, housewares, home tools, kitchen tools, food tools for life, as we name them. And these quality standards became more important because sustainability 10 years ago wasn't as big as an importance or a trend as it is now. It's definitely, it was not a hype. It's definitely here to stay. And especially in Western Europe, that became very important. And we see the same now in the US. So that's, I think these things changed for us, specifically on cheese. It's more about the sexiness of melting cheese. You already mentioned raclette.
Yeah.
That does very well online. So it's very, let's say, Instagrammable. So these things didn't really happen 10 years ago as they are happening now.
But you had, it was great. You had the forecasting, you were on the forefront of it, because you said, and this is now, I'm telling you, 10 years ago, you said, I believe party clettes, raclette parties are going to be the next big thing. And I really think I do see it now, like when people are having cheese parties, they're melting cheese on potatoes. And I believe your products are the reason for that. I mean, have you expanded that line even, or is it just like the one type of party clette and that's all you need?
No. We have expanded. We got like candlelight from 2 to 4 to 8 piece. We got electrical. We got... for half a wheel of cheese, for just tiny slices of cheese to make it more fun on the table as a little bar snack. But it wasn't, of course, it wasn't just us. It's the cheese guys that always try to promote their cheese. But they sometimes they need a little push, or and we are the enabler, let's say, to make eating their cheese a bit more fun. We were also lucky that Insider Foods, a couple of years ago, a week before Christmas, made a little video with our party clette, and I got a phone call, hey, you're going viral. I said, okay, interesting. So I'm looking online, see 10,000 views, 15,000, 20,000, and I look again, and it's not 20K, it was 20M. So it was 20 million views. 30 million views, up to 47 million views. Actually, it wasn't Instagram, it was Facebook. Also okay. Instagram, but Facebook was the big hit at that time. 47 million views. And that actually, we were sold out within 8 hours in the US, in Germany, in Holland, in the UK, in France. 8 hours. We didn't have enough inventory, definitely not to cover. Yeah, exactly, to cover the demand. But that helped. So sometimes you got to be a bit lucky as well. But the product was there. We promoted it and somebody picked it up. And then especially the cheese guys, I think, are very happy because we sell these tools once and the cheese is being eaten every time. So we got good friends in France and Switzerland. And nowadays, actually, also American-produced raclette, because raclette, some people might still not know, but it means scraping, but it also is a raclette cheese from the Alps and the Jura in France and in Switzerland. So these guys were happy as well.
Yeah. And I think you sort of mentioned it briefly just right now, and I know we talked about it in our pre-chat. You mentioned that when somebody buys a food tool at Bosca, there's a lifetime guarantee, because you just mentioned you were like, oh, somebody buys it once and they're good. You know, how important is this to you to offer this for your products? Because I think it's super cool that you're doing that.
Thank you. Now, it's literally my father, 83 years old. He's a businessman and he loves good products, because we've always been selling products that last a lifetime for industrial use. But I started with consumer products and he was jealous because there's rotation in consumer products. Hey, you sell every day and people keep on buying it. So he was a bit worried, actually. He said, are you sure you really going to offer lifetime guarantee? Because that means that you got to get rid of some of the assortment. I said, that's exactly what we want to do. Yeah, but then you're never going to sell anymore. He said, now I think there's like almost 8 billion people on the planet and most of them eat cheese. So there's enough to do still. And it actually became our unique selling point. That doesn't mean that we're the most successful business in sales. And that still means that it's pretty hard because our rotation of the same product is hardly there. If you know what I mean, if we sell a cheese plate once and never again. So it's a pretty bad business model. But it distinguishes ourselves, sadly, but from a big chunk of the market, because there's not so much quality. And if people are happy with their cheese plate they buy, they're going to look, hey, is there more? And now we have a pizza wheel in the same line. We have a meat knife in the same collection. We have different cheese knives. So for us, the commercial solution is collectability. The people are literally going to collect these products, or they're so happy with the product that they're going to give it away as a present. So 56% of our revenue is gift. So that's additional sales as well. So it's my goal to make these people that buy once, to make them very happy. And I never have to sell them anything again. So we make lifetime guarantee on 53% of the items right now. The rest 10 years. So we're still working on 100%. It's hard to do, for example, with electrical machines. We give a 10-year guarantee, and that's already hard because there's still plastics needed for these products. And we try not to use any plastics, and it's hard, but almost there. So we work, besides the lifetime guarantee, also with timeless design. So stone, steel, wood, all natural products, and the only colors black and white. So this is kind of our sustainability pitch. You say, hey, you buy it once and it's still nice after 20 years. It's not this fancy color that you don't like anymore next year, or not never going to use the product anymore, or you're going to throw it away and buy a new one. And we think that's not how we should treat the planet right now. And I think everybody's becoming aware of that. So it's a commercial decision. It's a branding decision. And it feels really good to offer this in contrast of what a big chunk of the market is still offering.
Yeah, no. I love that you guys are developing a timeless quality to your products. The fact that, like you said, it's made with the highest quality materials, I think that's perfect. And it's what the world needs right now. So I love that you're working that side of the business into it.
Yeah, and we see that more and more people are following us right now.
Yeah, online or in real life?
I think in real life, yeah.
Yeah,
but,
cool.
we hope that the industry, of course, is following us. It's not that we want to be the only one. of course, I like the fact that we were the first one. But we see that, for example, several housewares companies in the Netherlands now became a B Corp as well, offering 10-year guarantee. And I think that's amazing because then that means that the end consumer is becoming aware of what we're actually offering. And we can never do that alone. We're a small company. So we need others in the industry to follow or to join. And that way, I think it's not just us. It's all together.
Certainly, certainly. And actually, I wanted to bring up, because I'm not sure everyone understands the history of Bosca, because you're part of a family business that's been existing for 125 years. I wanted you to, if you could talk about your great-grandfather and his background as a blacksmith and how it's matured, just for, you know, briefly go over the history of Bosca, because I think it's fascinating. How did it start? And, you know, how did you get to be in charge of it in the last, I think it's decade plus now, you know?
Definitely. Two decades plus. So actually, I bought the company. I mean, it's a family company, but I didn't just get it.
Sure.
Over 21 years ago. So that's I'm in charge since 2002. But I'm the fourth generation. My great-grandfather started in a little town next to Gouda as a blacksmith. That was in 1896. And being that blacksmith, he was located on Church Street. And Church Street was, of course, next to the church. And the church had a big square. And on the square in front of the church is where the cheese was traded. And so I was I'm literally born in Gouda, as most of my family is. But that little town next to Gouda actually became a world champion in cheese. So there's nowhere in the world as much cheese as in our little village. It's a village of only 20,000 inhabitants. And there's cheese trade over a couple of billions in dollars, but also stored and traded about 40 million pounds of cheese stored on a daily base. So it's an enormous industry. Sadly, there's no cheese in Gouda anymore. It used to be the big trading market in the 16th, 17th century, and then our village took over. So that helped. Being a blacksmith, the cheese traders came with their horse and carriage for new horseshoes to the blacksmith. And they asked, hey, can you make us a cheese tester, a cheese iron? Can you make us a cheese knife? We have these big, big Gouda wheels with the hard rind. Is there a solution easier than these big knives to start cutting these cheeses? So we developed semi-round knives with a side handle to be more stable and to cut through the hard cheeses. And later on, we developed a wire cutter, as most of you know, but the wire cutters that are in loads of stores worldwide now is actually one of them was invented by my father. Oh. So the blacksmith became professional tools for cheese. And when I took over, I started with the consumer brand because we've been selling cheese planes for over 60 years, but there was mostly the cheese brand name printed on the cheese planes. We still do that, by the way. With an etching method, or laser engraving. But there was no Bosca on it. So when I started, I was like, hey, why are we only building their brand and not our own? Because I think we can do more than just a cheese plane. So we started exporting from two countries now to 108 countries. We started producing consumer items, everything around cheese, about 300 products, 300 SKUs, as we call them, around cheese, for cheese curling of the Tête de cheese of Switzerland, for raclette, for fondue, for grating, knives for cutting, of course, boards, aprons, everything around cheese. And now we developed even more. We do the same trick in a way because what we're good at is melting and presenting and cutting. So we make knives for pizza, we make fondue for chocolate, and we make boards for meat. So that's how we try to extend our line besides cheese. But the core, 90% of our business is still all around cheese. And in that sense, I was very lucky that we were located where we were, that my great-grandfather built that base that my father really started designing more and more industrial cutting solutions. And yeah, we kind of copied that, but then for the end consumer. So that's our story.
Yeah, no, and I love it. And I think what is also amazing is now you're leading the company to become a B Corp. And I wanted to know from you, how has that changed your thinking? You know, how has that made your company better?
Now, that's actually interesting. That's two different things, because it definitely helps to make our company better. But the thinking changed before. You were actually mentioning 10 years ago, what changed? Now, 10 years ago, we kind of did the same as what we're doing now. So our what, the Simon Sinek, why, how, what. Our what was maybe the same. But I was challenging our why. Why are we here? What do we contribute besides people eating more cheese? And what's our vision and mission for the company? And of course, we always look at the trends in the world and what actually draws our attention. And that was sustainability. And I looked into circular business modeling. But are people really going to rent a cheese fondue or a cheese plane? I didn't see it working. Mm. Cradle to cradle. Are we going to return a stainless steel cheese plane sometimes on the other side of the world and then melt it back and create a new one? I didn't see the solution there either. So I was a bit stuck. And after struggling for 3 years and doing all these advisors and all these beautiful thinkers, didn't really, they helped me in the process, but the solution was so close by and I didn't see it. And when we did a consumer research, people just gave back, the only thing we know you for is not because you guys are a cool company, you're nice talkers. No, we know you because you deliver quality. And I was like, so why do we need cradle to cradle if people actually never throw the product away? Why don't we just focus on that quality part? And that resonated. So we made the decision for that 10-year guarantee. And then we added lifetime guarantee 2 years ago. So that was the big vision mission change. And in the same period of time, I got to know B Corp. For the people that don't know, it's actually in the US, it's an official entity. It stands for Beneficial Corporation, found by a nonprofit called B-Lab. And I heard them speak in a conference in Canada 8 years ago. I was like, hey, this is interesting, guys. But I didn't know how to implement or what to do with it in my company. But 3 years fast forward, we figured out what our mission was, to change the industry standard into a lifetime guarantee. And then I remembered B Corp. I did a B Corp track of half a year, so explaining what B Corp was and if we could become a B Corp as our own company. And that was, in my eyes, definitely not the goal to become a B Corp, but the perfect guidance to get better every day and to actually work on our mission. So what B Corp does is actually their a guideline and a check. So an accountability tool for ourselves to really do what we're saying, and also to show the world that what we say is true because we're being checked by external parties. But even change our corporate statements, really do good work, and part of our revenue goes to good projects, but also part of our revenue goes to CO2 emission to make sure actually we cool down the planet. So we have a big plan in Tanzania and Africa where desert becomes green again. So it's a very simple project. It's called Just Dig It. So we dig holes, and because it's raining in the desert, believe it or not. It's not the Sahara, but it's in Tanzania. It's raining enough. The water just evaporates. It's dry land. If you dig a hole, water centrates, and within 4 months, it's green. Within 2 years, you got trees. So we're actually cooling down the planet by growing trees and bringing back biodiversity. Stuff like that wouldn't come up with me 10 years ago. And now, because we're becoming more and more aware, we're learning every day what we do, let's say, what we do wrong for the world. Mm-hmm. Now we change that. So B Corp is a guidance and a fantastic accountability partner, but it's also great for, it's also commercial because it's great for PR. And we can officially use our stamp sustainable, which brings us more sales in our online marketplaces, for example. It's great for employer branding because all the millennials in Holland are very aware of what's happening in the world and what they want. And they want impact. They want to... There's a lot of business in the world anyways, but there's enough jobs. Sorry. There's enough jobs for them, but there's not... It's hard for them to distinguish, for the companies to distinguish themselves. And if they're a B Corp, it works fantastic.
Yeah, no, I love the cycle of it. I think that's really amazing that you guys are doing it. And it's a good model for everyone in the world. Martin, we're just going to take a quick break. Hey, everyone, you're listening to Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Gara Warren, and we will be right back.
Hi, listeners. We wanted to let you know that Heritage Radio Network's Julia Child Fellowship application is now open. The fellowship offers an enriching experience for aspiring food writers and journalists who share our passion for food systems change. The fellowship is a great way to progress in the field of food journalism and digital media and will start in early January 2024. This fellowship will provide participants with hands-on experience, mentorship, and access to an extensive network of industry professionals. The application deadline is November 27, 2023. Check out heritageradionetwork.org and click on the Julia Child Foundation Writing Fellowship link to learn more. If you or someone you know has interest in food studies and journalism, this might be a great fit. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and check out the application today. Thank you.
Welcome back, everyone, to Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Kara Warren. I'm here with Martin of Bosca. We're talking about cheese parties. We're talking about cheese curlers. We were just going over B Corp before. But now I have a fun question because I learned that he's a royal family favorite. And I want to know, what does it mean to be a certified purveyor to the royal household? And, you know, what does that mean for you? Does that say something about the brand that it's, or the tools that they're that great that the royal family can have it? What does it all mean?
Okay. This is an interesting, do you want me to be honest?
You know what?
Or do you want me to tell?
You know, you can give me both answers because I'm interested in both of these things because I feel like it is really cool. And, but it's also probably like, I don't know, maybe it's a business thing too. I don't know. You tell me though.
It's all of the above. And if you're a Republican, you might think, what is it worth to supply the royal family? But what it actually means to me, so this is honest. It's both honest, actually, but it's just some people don't want to hear this. For me, it's actually a proof of that what we're saying, what my family did over the last 125 years is true, is rewarded, and that because what's happening is that the government in the Netherlands and the royal family, if you're 100 years old as a company or 125 or 150 years old, it's only every 25 years and it starts with 100 years old, then you become a royal company or you become a purveyor to the royal court, as we say. That means that people from the royal family come to visit you, that the government comes to visit you. But before that, for about a year, year and a half, they check everything. Your books, if you've been a good person, if you behaved well. If my father of 83 years old behaved well, that was the scariest part because he had a longer life than I had. But he did well. So he was a decent boy, apparently. At the end, I thought my father is a Calvinistic person, and he just always said, you know what, you don't have to talk about the family business or about four generations or about branding or about the fact that you are now royal. It's just make a good product and then the rest will follow. Now, I learned in the States and in Japan and that's not always the case. It's a busy world nowadays in communication. So you got to scream if you're a small company, and you got to show off sometimes a bit. And when I told the story of the fourth generation, when I had some Japanese clients, it was 20 years ago at a big food show. Some of your listeners will know it. It's the CL in Paris, one of the first biggest shows. One of the first big shows that I attended with an own booth. I got my still current distributor from Japan over. And we didn't know each other. So I explained what we did. And he said, okay, it's nice what you do, but why do you do it? And where did you come from? And how long is the company existing? I said, actually, the company already exists for 120 years, now 127. And then the big guys came out and they wanted to know everything. And then I realized what a value our story had, where in the Netherlands, that's not so much of value. So becoming royal or a purveyor to the royal court, I thought it wouldn't do too much to my father. But he's 83 now, and this was 2 years ago, last year, January. And I think he didn't want to show it, but he became very emotional and he was very proud. And so it did do a lot more to him. So he was proud. And at the end of the day, we can say that we're purveyor to the royal court. The cheese plane with Swarovski diamonds is now being used in the castles in Holland where the royal family still lives. So it's a fun story.
Oh my goodness, I want to look that up. I want to see what that looks like. That's amazing. So then I had another funny question that I thought of. You know, I was thinking, what would Martin do if he was stuck on a mountain with like lots of different cheeses? Which cheese tool would you choose? If you could only take one, which cheese tool would it be?
On a mountain.
With lots of cheese.
With lots of cheese, and it has to fit the mountain. And since the Netherlands is, I think, the flattest country in the world, for me, the mountain is skiing. Every year we go to the south of France or Switzerland or Austria, and we try to ski or snowboard and enjoy life there. And that's when fondue, raclette, and the tête de moine, the cheese curler, comes in. But I think I would know how to melt the cheese with a little fire in a pot and a pan. Same with raclette. But I think I'll pick the cheese curler because the tête de moine is actually a nice story. It's a cheese that was invented in 1192 in the Abbey of the Belay. And in the Jura, and it's a beautiful monk's cheese. And because you cut off the top of the cheese, they call it the monk's head cheese, the tête de moine, head of the monk. And that cheese is fantastic if you eat it very thin, with a cheese plane that makes very thin slices, or with a curler. So you scrape the cheese off, and it becomes a flour of cheese. And because it's so thin and it mixed with good oxygen, like you drink a good glass of wine, you need oxygen to taste it and to get it into your palate. Now that's where the cheese curler comes in. So I would pick that tool because I wouldn't know how to eat it different. Because if you eat it just in a chunk, it's not so good. If you eat it as a thin flour of cheese, it's delicious. So I think that's my pick. Is that a good answer?
I think it's a great answer because it was very logical. And I do really feel like cheese rosettes are having a moment right now. And cheese curlers, I think everyone should have one.
You call it rosettes.
Yes, we call them rosettes in the U.S. At least that's what the Swiss marketing has trained me to call it. I think it's a very smart pick. I think it's really good. Actually, I wanted to follow up because it's kind of like a gift as well. Are you seeing, and maybe you mentioned this earlier in the episode, but are you seeing more of corporate gifting for cheese tools? Are they becoming wedding party gifts? How has that been working for Bosca?
Now we've been supplying to that market for a long time, as well as for example in the Netherlands, tourism is a big part because people come to the Netherlands and they want an original tool from our place. But there's Christmas packages, a gift for Christmas, which is in Europe not very high. Not a very big amount of money that's been given to that. It's in the opposite of the States, by the way. So people want value for money, but they actually sometimes accept no value for money. So they want something big, and it doesn't matter if it works or not. It totally doesn't fit our company. But corporate gifting is different, because corporate gifting, people want to give something that's durable, that's actually being used for another 20 years. So that's perfect for our products, because that's actually our whole pitch. So we see that corporate gifting is picking up. And in the past, it was more food, mm-hmm. nice chocolate or a big smoked salmon from Norway, or cosmetics, for example, fantastic gifts. But they're not so... They're not sustainable, and they're not there to stay. So we see that corporate gifting is shifting in general a lot to housewares, because housewares are there to stay. You see them every day. You use them. They're in your drawer, or even better, they're visible in your kitchen. So cheese boards, for example, with engraving are a big thing. Mm-hmm. In Europe, a cheese plate, everybody in the average amount of cheese plates in a household is 2.7, by the way. So everybody uses one, and yeah, there's of course also products that don't work. And if the one that works has your name on it, that's a big one. But also now whole kitchen knife collections, that's in your kitchen every day, very visible. So yeah, we see that the corporate gifting is growing, picking up, and I think we can do a lot more there. But we can do it. We're a factory. We design, we develop, so we sell to resellers and not so much to directly to consume, to customer, to companies. Mm-hmm. But I think that could be a big potential for the future.
And in your different types of cheese knives, so there's everyday consumer knives, and then there's cheese professional knives. How are they different? Is it just a material thing, or some of its design? How do you make the difference?
Now, in use, we try not to make them that different, but we see that people in the industry want bigger, heavier tools. And they're willing to pay a little bit more. So that sometimes helps in design. Solid handle versus a hollow handle, for example. We make solid handles with cast iron in it, and Yeah, that's fantastic. And that's sometimes not always necessary for end consumers that only use it a couple of times a year. So that's in knives, that's the biggest difference. And there's, of course, very special knives that if you cut a big Gouda wheel or a Conte, etc. But especially actually cheeses with hard rinds, mm-hmm. they're hard to cut. So we have enormous knives, like they're 15 inch, they're half round. And why half round? Because when you press the knife, you don't want to cut the whole rind at the same time. So you cut only 1 inch at a time. Hey, that reminds me of a movie. 1 inch at a time. And that cuts the rind entirely. So these are specific knives. Wire cutters, the same story. Best way to cut the cheese is with a wire. You need to score the cheese first in the rind, because a wire is strong but not sharp. So we need a scoring knife. And then with the wire, you have no cutting loss. It's fantastic for the construction of the cheese, because if you use, for example, a meat slicer, an electric meat slicer for cheese, it's really bad, because it changes the structure of the cheese and the oxygen. It kills the oxygen. Also, the knife becomes too hot sometimes, so it almost melts the cheese. So you don't want to slice a cheese, you want to cut a cheese, and preferably, if possible, with a wire, because also less pressure, ergonomically better, and you have less waste. So I can continue for hours about this because we have a lot of these items that are specifically for the professional and not so much for use in indoor, in-house.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the things I wanted to also just point out to the listeners is where do you think is the best place to buy Bosca tools? Is it online or is it certain types of stores? Because here they've heard everything about how awesome they are. And I would love for them to be able to find where to buy them.
Now, to be honest, our strategy, you can know our strategy, because some people hide that. I told you about our mission and our vision.
Mm-hmm.
But how we get there as a company to really make impact, we have three things. We want to be a cool brand. So we do weird photo shoots. We try to work a lot together with the industry. So that's one part, branding. Other part is giftable and collectible. So we make good products, but to run the business and to make some money, we try to make them collectible so that they all belong together. So we do a lot in design. We have a lot of industrial designers. Luckily, Holland has one of the best design schools, industrial design schools. The Technical University of Delft and Eindhoven are both amazing level, like top of the world. So that's what we do with collectability and design. And then giftability, products should be read well and look fantastic. So that's the two. And then number three, and that's when I get to the answer, is availability. So when people want to know where to get us, I want to make sure that we make it as easy as possible. Of course, retail has been, especially non-food retail, has been struggling over the last years. But if we look at retail, they only sell part of our selection, sadly, but it's Williams-Sonoma, for example, the kitchen stores, Crate and Barrel. But I also really like the distribution via the people that actually know the real use, and that's the cheese stores. So most of the cheese stores sell our products, luckily, and high-end grocery. High-end like Wegmans or Whole Foods or Murray's stores in the Kroger's do a fantastic job. Now the biggest, let's say, specialty cheese store chain in the world. So I think hats off for what Murray's did. And we see also now that HEB in Texas does an amazing job there. So the specialty cut and wrap facilities in the grocery stores, the high-end grocery stores, really make a difference to what's happening online. So hats off for them. And then, of course, because we want to be available, we're at Amazon. And because we want to make life easy for the end consumer. So Amazon carries the biggest assortment, biggest range. But Amazon can't explain what cheese to use for what tool and how to make the perfect cross merchandise in these combinations. So we really like the still the retail floor, and that's also where a big of a chunk of our focus is. And then last but not least, by the way, is of course Bosca.com.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, you got to be accessible.
Yeah, exactly. We got to be accessible, available. Our own website, of course, carries everything, but people like easy, so they order at Amazon anyways, or they go to their Kroger stores anyways, and then they buy us. So 95% is via resellers, 5% is at Bosca.com, where we have the whole assortment. So of course, we love people to go there, but it's not that we can never compete with somebody that actually sells cheese and our accessories next to it, and that's fantastic because we need each other.
Yeah, 100%. I was just thinking about how Bosca is part of the cheese experience and part of a gathering. Like having the right cheese tools makes the party or the experience better. And I guess I wanted to have this one final question because I remember what you said to Anne back some years ago, which is, you know, it's very important to you to create a cheese experience for cheese gatherings. And I was wondering if you could just re-explain that again and why that's so important. Why is it important to have great cheese experiences and cheese gatherings?
I gotta be honest, I don't have a clue what I told you, Anne, 10 years ago.
No, but it's the similar thinking. Yeah.
I always think the real conversation starts at the table. And of course, it's not the food. It's also not the tools. It's the people you're eating with. So it's people. And we are facilitator. That's our job, to make life a bit easier, but a bit more fun as well. And I believe a bit of interaction on the table. So we were talking about a cheese curler, which is a very specific tool, of course, but also fondue. When there's one fondue pot on the table, it's entertainment, it's interaction. People gotta be involved. And I think that's where we come in. Also, a bit of education. What's the perfect cheese board? And I'm not the guy that's going to tell you which cheese, because I'm not a cheese producer. But what I do like to explain my friends, for example, is, guys, did you know there's different kinds of cheeses? Yeah, what do you mean? Of course we know. What do you mean? Mm-hmm. French cheese and Dutch cheese, or we got Brie and we got Gouda. Okay, that's true. But do you realize that there's different colors in these cheese departments, and these colors are segments? So you got fresh cheese, and you got white cheese, and white malt, and you got red bacteria or washed rind, and you have blue vein cheese, and then there's hard cheese. And then people are like, oh, okay, interesting. Yeah. You got goat, and you got cow, and you got sheep. People get that. But I try to make it simple. Say, okay, if you have a cheese board and you only want to use three cheeses and hopefully you like them, take red, white, and blue. And my minimum of my cheese boards at home are five, where I add some fresh cheese and some hard cheese. So it's five cheese. You got a nice story to tell. So if you're a host and you want to make it simple for yourself, so you don't need to be in the kitchen the whole time, but you can be together with your guests on the table, you have a nice story to tell about your cheeses, or you do it all together. You melt the raclette on the table or the fondue and you interact with yourself. I think that's party on the table. And that's where good conversations start, and that's where fun happens. So that's what I like. I'm not the best chef, but I think I'm pretty good at throwing parties where people interact. And that's, I think, my job in life or so.
Martin, thank you. Yeah, I was just going to say, you do throw the best parties. I've been to a few of your cheese parties before for different awesome cheese conferences and party things. And you know how to party, my friend. So I just want to say thank you for coming on the show today. Thank you for being your best Martin self and teaching us about Bosca, because I think not enough people knew that history yet. So I just want to say thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity and to stay friends in cheese. Let's continue the journey together.
Absolutely. So please follow Bosca on Instagram at Bosca_foodtools, or go to their website, usa.bosca.com. Plus, you can follow us at Cutting the Curd and myself at Kara Warren. And please listen and subscribe to Cutting the Curd wherever you listen to your podcast. Also, don't forget to give a 5-star review on wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks, and eat more cheese. Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio, or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.